Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Hi, Lynn. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Laura.
I'm so excited to chat with you. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm Lynn Painter, author of Better Than the Movies, a YA rom-com. I live in Omaha, Nebraska. I write a few times a month for the Omaha World Herald. I have 5 kids. I'm kind of not really that exciting. That's pretty much it about me.
It's okay, but you wrote a great book. So I really I can't wait to chat with you. I can't wait to chat about your passion for romance and like rom-com. So speaking of that, like let's start actually talking about the YA. Why pick a YA book to write, you know, as opposed to any other genre?
Right. Well, you know, what's weird. I didn't land on it first. I grew up always reading romance, just straight up adult romance. So when I started writing, I wrote a bunch of really terrible romance novels. Mm-hmm. And then I tried writing like upmarket women's fiction. And I thought I was smarter than I was and tried literary fiction. And it wasn't until I read a couple John Green, because I read YA too, but I read a couple John Green books right in a row. I think it was Paper Towns and Looking for Alaska. And there was something about it where it just hit where I was like, that vibe just feels really natural to me. Like it just feels kind of like home. And then once I started writing that, it just felt like, hey, this is what I should be writing, you know? Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the first YA book I wrote didn't sell, but but it was on the right direction.
Yeah, I like your voice. It's like fresh and it's about the first beginnings, but there's like something, it matches for adult audience who are not in their teenage years, who are pre-K, like all these little tidbits of things that you're like, oh my gosh, I know this or I know that. And so it's like, it's a wider audience. Like it's not just like for YA. Like it still has the freshness of beginnings and first kisses and first dating and all those different things, first love.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, oh, you know, so we're just well, like, yeah.
And I tried writing it without thinking, because my thing with YA is that it used to be, it seems like back in the day, when you read YA, it felt like adults were trying to write a book they thought you should read. You know, like it felt like it was intentionally a grown-up writing it for a young adult. And it's changed a lot. And now YA, you know, it's just the age of the protagonist. But there's plenty of there's sex in YA, there's swearing in YA. And I just did not give any thought to wanting it to sound a certain age, because I have teenagers and they're savvy and their dialogue, it's not like they sound like little kids. I mean, they talk just like adults. So I was trying to be intentional about the experience is that of a teenager, but it doesn't necessarily mean they have to talk like a very young person. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but
so. And you mentioned you read romance. So what kind of romance did you read? Like, do you read historical, contemporary? And then, like, what do you go for?
I read contemporary and historical. Like, of course, I love, Julia Quinn, Lisa Kleffis. Now, of course, I'm drawing blanks. But I just devoured those. Julia London, all of those. And I used to read a lot of the, who's the author, Joan Johnson, I think, a lot of the like Texas cowboy ones. And I was just into all of it. Like just one of those, like anytime you're at the grocery store and there's a romance novel, yep, I'm taking it. I'm reading it, you know, and Rachel Gibson, I used to read a ton of her. And yeah, but I just wasn't good at that. I don't, maybe if I tried it now, I would be better.
Oops. know, like, it's totally fine. Like, you find your voice. And so it's fun to have a romance, like, you know, to have a happily ever after set with a younger audience, you know. There are romance readers who read that, you know, this book. So it's like, it's great. Like, I'm a romance reader who reads YA. And I see how, like, the YA romance, you know, because there's something to be said about the first love, first kiss.
Yes.
And all the fun stuff, the beginning, you know.
Yes.
And it's happy, and I'm okay with a happy for now. Like, I'm like, not every romance needs to end with marriage.
Right, especially in YA. That's so unlikely, you know? But in my opinion, it just needs to end with a happy ending for them now. They don't need to promise to marry each other, you know?
Yeah, so I like it. Awesome. So I've been asking this question to authors about, like, what they do for fun, what they do, what their passion is. And it could be writing, it could be reading, it could be something else. But where is something that you get in the flow that sparks joy? Like, if Marie Kondo tells you, like, this is what I do and it sparks joy, you know?
You know what? That is a terrible question for me, because I would do better telling you things that I am not good at. Like, I have this group of writer friends that it's like a debut group, you know, and like, one of them, she writes this amazing fan fiction where, like, a million people love what she writes. And then somebody else, she sews outfits and they knit and they do all this amazing stuff. I have no talent. I suck at crafts and I hate crafts. I have the motor skills of, like, a kindergarten. Like, I can't cut a straight line. And I don't do anything cool. Like, writing has been my hobby for so long before I was published that it's like, now I guess that I'm an author, it's not considered a hobby anymore, but it's still my, like, thing I want to do. Anytime I have free time, that's what I want to do, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't have any cool hobbies besides, like, binging Netflix.
I think you've been able to manage to binge Netflix and binge, like, all these rom-coms and write about it. So that's a cool hobby.
There you go.
You've been able to monetize your hobby. You're not. Sorry.
Yeah, right? Netflix has gotten too good lately, because I'll, like, turn it on to put it in the background, and then you'll be like, oh, they just put Crazy Stupid Love on, and I'm like, oh, I can put that on the background, I've seen it 100 times. And then the second Ryan Gosling comes on, I'm like, staring at the TV, not writing. Yeah. Got too many good things on there. And, like, Gilmore Girls, I'm like, oh, forget it, I'm just gonna watch this all day.
Yep, I understand. So, speaking of, let's talk about Better Than the Movies. It's a rom-com homage to rom-coms. And so we get to see, so what was your research like to get all the different codes and get all the storylines, you know? I'm assuming you watch a lot of rom-coms and you got to refresh them. So I'm assuming you spend some time refreshing, you
know? Yeah, and that's funny. That's exactly what it was. Because I grew up, like Liz in the book, watching rom-coms with my mom. I mean, when I was little, I watched the Pillow Talk with Rock Hudson and Doris Day, like all of the really old ones. And so I grew up watching those. My mom, I swear, we had them on VHS and then on DVD. And so I've watched so many of them. But then when all of a sudden I would go to start a chapter and I'd be like, well, wait, what was that he said in 10 Things I Hate About You exactly? So then, of course, I would have to sit down and watch the whole movie again. So it was kind of a treat revisiting so many of these that I thought I knew by heart. Until I needed to. Then I watched them again, you know, so it was the most fun research ever.
Yes, I love the research. And tell us a little bit of a pitch, like, what is this book about? You know, so
it's Liz is a hopeless romantic. She grew up watching rom-coms, is kind of obsessed with them. So when her childhood crush moves back to town, she is convinced that fate has put him in her path to be her, whatever, true love, or at the very least, her prom date. But of course, like the way anything goes, he doesn't land and hang out with her and her friends. She's not super social. He starts hanging out with the boy who lives next door to her, who is very social, and also the obnoxious guy she grew up with, who used to, you know, throw things at her when she was playing outside. So she has to use Wes to get noticed and to get into Michael's world. So that's kind of the elevator pitch.
Yeah, so love is a little fake dating, a little bit of enemies to lovers, so it's a lot of banter. There's a lot of like tension, like growing, trying to figure out will they, won't they, and then Michael trying to be meddling, be like, oh, you should like Wes, you know. I don't want you.
Well, and the hardest thing about that is that, you know, especially in a rom-com, it is predictable. I mean, most rom-coms, you watch the first 5 minutes and you know that Sandra Bullock is going to end up with, I'm trying to think which movie she's in, but you know, you know, she's going to end up with Bill Pullman the first time you meet them, or, you know, Julia Roberts and Richard Gere are going to end up together at the end of Pretty Woman, but it's all about the journey, how you get there. So that was my biggest challenge, is knowing I'm writing something absolutely predictable. They're fake dating. You know, all along they're going to end up. So what can you do to make it not just another fake dating book, you know? So this one was kind of fun, just trying to use as many rom-com tropes as possible.
Yes. And I love the little homage. Like, I love that Michael read The Duke and I, and he was looking for the next Bridgerton book. And I was like, first of all, this book was written before Bridgerton came out. So I know. Yes. Like, this is like...
That's what was so funny about this. I, like, emailed my editor in a panic when I saw it was coming out from Netflix, because with the original draft, I was just picking, I wanted it to be funny that Michael read romance.
Yeah.
So I could have just as easily picked a Lisa Kleppis book, and I just happened to pick The Duke and I because it was one of my all-time favorites. And then all of a sudden I'm like, well, by the time the book comes out, this is going to be a movie. Oh my God, do I need to mention in there that it's on Netflix or anything? And she's like, nah, we'll just let it go. But that was just a total accidental thing that happened.
So it's a really accidental, but it's like, it just, I wouldn't reflect it for me as a reader was like, oh my gosh, she's a romance reader. Because it's like, it's such a, like, I know it's a famous book, but before the Bridgerton series, like, it's a 20-year-old book. It's not like.
Right, that's exactly it. Like, I'm looking at right now, I've got my purple copy over there, my old paperback that is not the book adaption. It's been in my house for 20 years or whatever. Yeah. I loved all of those Bridgerton books, you know?
Yeah, so I love it. I love the little homage, and like for new readers, new to romance, and be like, wait, there's a book for this, you know?
Yep. So awesome. And they're so good.
They're so good. I know. I got the new Lisa Kleypas book today, and I was like, it's my day.
You did? Oh, you shouldn't tell me it's out.
I'm sorry. It comes out. It comes out in a couple of months, but I got the advanced reader's copy, and I was like,
you did?
Oh my gosh, I need to stop. Yeah. It's with Lily's and Wes' daughter. That's the new...
Oh.
That's a new heroine. I don't know who the hero is.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, I think it's the Scottish guy the hero is. So.
Oh, there's so many. That's like the other day on NetGalley, I got approved for Susan Elizabeth Phillips' new book.
Gosh, yeah.
And she hasn't had one out in a long time, and I love her. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, all right, I need to fit in more reading time.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. So, what's been the process of writing during the pandemic? Has it been any easier, any harder? Like, has it been different? You know,
for me, I'm a weirdo. It's been great for my because, you know, when, especially, I'm not a full-time writer. I have a day job and I have kids. And so usually my life would be, you get up, you eat breakfast, take your kids to school, you go to work. Then when you're done, you know, you pick up the kids from school, you come home, you make dinner, you clean up. All of that is done before I ever take out a computer and get to write. Where all of a sudden working from home, you're picking up a little bit while you're working. You know, I have asthma, so I have one of those comorbidities where I've been pretty much staying home since it started. So it's like the groceries, I'm not running to Target 3 times a week now. I'm getting groceries delivered. So all of a sudden I have way more time. It kind of just showed me all of the time that I waste usually. Like, Lynn, you don't need to go to Target again. You need to stay home and write. So the pandemic has actually been great for my writing production. I mean, I'm so glad that we're getting vaccinated and we're, you know, finally leaving this tunnel we've been in, but it's taught me a little bit about focus.
Yeah, I think it's something interesting. For me, the pandemic has been like, I've been more productive in the pandemic than I would have if I was like actually like going to work and going all the stuff and like going to Target and going to the grocery store. I now go back to the grocery store because I like it, but it's a once a week, you know, or
yes,
once, like every other week outing, but it's not this like constant like outing,
yes,
you know, like, and it's noticeable because I moved. I lived in New York before the pandemic, and I moved to Chicago 2 weeks before the pandemic started. So,
oh my god,
2 weeks I was like excited. I was like running around. I got to see all these different places, all these different sightseeing. And then the pandemic happened. Everything shut down, and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna stay in my house. And then I got like all these stuff done, and I was like, oh, this is great. And so, like now that I'm vaccinated, I'm like, oh, I can go out. And I'm like, actually get
delivery,
you know.
Yep. That's what I said to my husband. I'm like, don't let me go back to my old Target ways. Like once a week, maybe, but too often. I think I didn't realize how much time and money I was wasting by every other day being like, oh, I need to run to the store for whatever thing I would get, and then you buy 10 more things. And this has really taught me a lot about how much I can get done if I just keep my butt in my chair at home.
Yeah. So I'm grateful. There's things that I'm like, I'm looking forward to bring it back after the pandemic, but there's a lot of things that I'm grateful that I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep it this way.
Yes. It has been interesting.
So.
Yep.
Awesome. So what is your favorite trope to write, and what is your favorite trope to read?
I love writing enemies to lovers. Not hardcore enemies. I just love banter. I love the back and forth, snarky banter between two characters where it's not enemies like they hate each other, but I just think it's super fun to have that smart aleck calling each other out back and forth kind of thing. So probably enemies to lover. I do like fake dating too, because there's always just so many fun directions you can go with that, and finding them each shocked by what they're learning about the other one is a blast. What I love to read is I don't know, I've seen a bunch of memes about it lately, but the whole he hates everyone but her type of thing, you know, like the Darcy. And I just finished The Love Hypothesis by Allie Hazelwood. It comes out in September. So good. She wrote tons of Raylo fan fiction.
Ooh.
And yeah, and this is totally that type of thing, and it's so good. And it's like the main love interest, he's kind of surly and everybody hates him, but he just burns for her, and it's just amazing. So I love to read that.
Gosh, yeah, I would love to read that. I love reading like the Grumpy Sunshine when they're so,
yes,
and my favorite trope is when they cannot sleep with anyone but the person, they need to cuddle with that person only, like they're unable to sleep at all. They're like, I can't sleep at all, I can't stand the night, and then the person comes in, they're able to sleep, and you're like, oh my god.
Yes, oh my god. You know, isn't like, it funny how we love all of this stuff, but in the real world,
oh my gosh,
would not happen. But in books, you're like, oh my god, this is so great.
Yes, take us to this journey.
Yes, totally.
So you've books, but what has been a book that you read other than The Love Hypothesis that you can stop gushing about?
I loved The Grace Year. I can't think of the author's name. That was really, really great. I just started yesterday, so I guess I can't gush about it yet, but Pride and Premeditation by Terza Price.
Yep.
It's
a good one.
Did you read that?
Yeah, I did.
I'm only done with the first chapter, but it's really, really good so far. I loved A Lady's Formula for Love by Elizabeth Everett. That was really, really good with STEM and historical romance. I'm trying to think. I knew you were going to ask this, and now, of course, I'm drawing a blank. So I'm just staring over my bookshelves. Like, what did I love? I usually don't read cozy mysteries, and I read Killer Content by Olivia Black.
Ooh.
And that was really, really cute because it's a cozy where the protagonist was in her 20s, mm-hmm, and it was set in Brooklyn. Ooh. So it was a little more contemporary, and that was really, really good.
That's not good.
Yeah, but I can't stop gushing about The Love Hypothesis. Like, you need to read it. Everybody needs to read it. If you love romance, it just hits all the marks. So good.
So tell us where we can find you online.
Oh, I'm on Twitter at LA Painter. So my Instagram is Lynn Painter Kirkle.
Awesome.
just look up Lynn Painter and I'm sure you can find me.
Yeah, we'll put it on the show notes, so no worries. Thank you, Lynn, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatreadnextblog.com. The What Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.